CliffCentral.com. There it is, the Auto Trader Podcast, South Africa's number one motoring podcast, and it is hosted right here on CliffCentral.com every week with George Meany and the team from Auto Trader. Interesting stuff that they always have to share with us. I didn't know that cruise control was invented by a blind man. See, you learn useful and interesting things. And don't forget, George joins us on this show every Friday, just before 8 o'clock, so don't miss that when Friday rolls around. Also, we got Ben coming back this Friday. We got Gord joining us. I think he's back from Europe too. There's a whole lot of activity on the show this week. Pumi Mashiho and I obviously back for the Burning Platform on Thursday, and plenty of other good stuff too. So loads of very cool things happening. Hopefully you've got a start to your day that you approve of, and hopefully everyone is conforming to your desires for the day. That the traffic lights are green. There's no one shouting at you in the traffic. There's no one giving you like the gears at the office. Everything works. Your coffee tastes good. You know, you get things done. That'll be nice. Let's hope it all works out that way.
If only it could work like that. But thanks for the good vibes, Garrett. Speaking of the office, I'm actually coming in today. Ooh. So I'm excited to see you guys. Cool. It feels like it's been ages. Yeah,
you haven't actually been in the office though for a little while. There's going to be lots of excitement to see you again.
Yeah. Oh, more from my side. I cannot wait to see everyone. So, yay, bring out the balloons.
Damn right. Yeah, we had, it was so sad. Like last Tuesday, Greg, he had his birthday on Monday last week, and I had my birthday the Friday before. And Greg and I hate birthdays. We don't like making a fuss of ourselves. So usually, you know what happens at the office. Everybody gathers, we have a cake, people sing happy birthday. Mm. It's all really nice and celebration. And then that person makes a speech and all of that stuff. Well, Greg and I were like, okay, yeah, thanks everybody. Have some cake. Bye. And we both like just disappeared to our offices because I don't like a fuss and neither does he. So we
party poopers.
No, we were
it's
glad.
Not about y'all.
I know.
Sure, it's your birthday.
We were just glad we could like roll it all into one, and then we didn't have to stick around for all the noise. Anyway, everybody else had fun, so who cares what we think, right?
Exactly. Like I'm saying, it's not about y'all. It's about the fact that we're coming together as people, we're celebrating y'all, and we get to eat cake. Who doesn't like to eat cake?
Damn right. So, I've woke up this morning feeling a bit shitty, didn't sleep well last night, but Lebang definitely won that game because she says her two-year-old kept her awake all night and the two-month-old is also sleeping in the bed with them. So I'm not even going to complain about what I deal with on a daily basis. But, there's some people who have really, really tough things to deal with, and she also lost all those fish that she loved so dearly in her koi pond. She was so attached to them, Lebang. She's broken-hearted this morning telling us about how my fish are dead. So I feel so bad. Listen, if you are going to get new fish, and I don't think you should, but if you are, just look out because these things are really expensive. Like if you want proper koi fish, be very careful.
Yeah. And they're just so sensitive. Like I see the price, the expense part, I get it. But you have to just know exactly what you're doing. And I'm going to give it another swig. I just for myself. And if I fail again, then it's over. It's done.
You're a lunatic.
Finished. Forget it.
You are a lunatic. So what happened to you at the bank? Because I believe you pulled a bit of a Karen.
I've just discovered that pulling a Karen is the only way to get shit done.
What happened?
I kid you not. So I went to the bank Sunday night. I needed one of those ATMs that you can deposit money into. So I headed all the way to the mall. FYI, I hate malls. But I was like, look, this is the only one I can find where I can actually deposit money into. Get there, cha-la-la-la-la, minding my own business. Boom, the ATM does not deposit the money, nor does it give me my money back. It just gives me a slip.
What?
It just pretty much
took your money.
It out.
Just took your money.
Dude, it took my money. So Jesus. It just gives me a slip that says, oh, sorry. Sorry for the inconvenience. We just couldn't continue this mission. Bye. Type thing. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, no. Can I get my money back? So I'm looking around like, is there security? I see security, but I'm like, yo, dude, I try to put money in. And he goes, yeah, this happens often. These machines these days. Oh. I'm like, nah, I'm not taking this. This is not an excuse. He's like, just call the call center. They'll help you. I'm like, no. I came here to deposit my money And if it doesn't reflect into my account, then we've got a problem. So make something happen. Anyway, long story short, I just start like huffing and puffing, can't breathe. I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God, where's my money? What's going to happen? Dude, it's a sunny night. The branches are closed. So I'm freaking out. I'm thinking I just got scammed.
Right.
And you know, like I'd stay getting scammed. So now I'm like, not again. Anyway, I take a picture of the security guard. I take a picture of the ATM. I take a picture of the slip. I'm like, I'll sort this out in the morning. First thing in the morning, I just start tweeting the bank. I'm like, hey guys, I'm on my way to the branch. If I get to the branch and my shit is not sorted, you guys are going to see me there all day today. They don't say anything. I'm like, sharp. Now I'm inside the branch. I tell them my story. The guy's like, fill in this form. It'll take 3 to 4 working days. I'm like, what? No, sir. What? I don't have 3 to 4 working. Dude, I'm like, your ATM inconvenienced me. Why am I waiting 3 to 4 working days? Go to the ATM, take my money out and give it back to me. It surely has to be that simple. No, we have to call technician after technician. We need to get permission after permission. I'm like,
jeez.
And I'm like,
pain in the back.
Karen mode. Dude. No. So now I'm like, I stand up. I'm like, you know what? This is not right. This is not fair. I'm a what? I'm a law-abiding citizen. I deserve better. I need to speak to your manager. Dude, as soon as I said I need to speak to your manager, some lady comes through with the suit. And she's wearing a suit. Hi, ma'am. My name is Lizzie. This will only take 24 hours. I'm like, oh. So we went from 3 to 4 working days to 24 hours because I pulled a Karen. Then I said to her, look, this money is urgent. I need it for blah, 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 blah. If you guys don't give it back to me today, then it's going to be chaos. And mind you, I'm tweeting at the same time. So, you know, so they're like, okay, let's make it happen. Oh my gosh, this chick is going to get us into shit. Gareth, an hour later, they had put the money in my account.
Okay, so all's well that ends well, but you had to pull a Karen.
I had to pull a Karen, and that's the frustrating thing. Why am I having to blow everything out of proportion, you know, as a social experiment? Really, I couldn't care less to do all of that, but I was like, I can see what's going on here. I'm not going to get anything if I just say, okay, cool, bye, guys, you'll call me. No, I had to sort of lose my shit. That's when they took me seriously.
Don't you think, like, a lot of people are just hoping to get away with being useless. So if you make no scene and you just let it slide and you go, oh, well, I'm sure that they'll find my money, and you don't create like any noise or nonsense, then most of the time you do get your money back and everybody's fine and nobody gets shat on and you don't have to call the manager or any of that stuff. And everything's okay because no one has to like be called out. But you occasionally have to have a temper tantrum just to get people to do their jobs.
100%. And it's nonsense. Really, it's nonsense. Like, bare minimum. Can you just, you know, if the ATM wasn't broken already, this wouldn't be the case.
Chris says, why is Lebang harassing the security guard? What does he have to do with ATM?
Bro, if you're at like an ATM and you're the only person there at a row of like 10 ATMs and the only other human around you is a security guard, you will ask them. You'll say, dude, is like, what's going on here? And also, I wasn't harassing them. I was literally like, yo, security, can you secure me? And they were very helpful. They told me that, look, this thing happens a lot. Don't worry, it's not just you. And also, I was concerned that there's like a syndicate happening in that area. And if there's anybody that should know, it would be the security guards. It really wasn't harassment, Chris T. But anyway, I got my money back. It's cool.
Well, Corona's Boring wants you to please help with his taxes. So if you could please do the same thing on behalf of my taxes, that's cool.
Dude, I'll tell you how to pull a Karen. Pulling a Karen is easy. You just, there's a certain shoe that you need to wear and a certain hairstyle.
Yes.
That you have to have.
Yeah, you need to have, that hairstyle. My sister calls it a centurion look. And the centurion look is like this. She explained it to me the other day. She said, floral top, loose hanging, like floral top over a, what would you even call it? Like a
vest?
Almost like a women's top underneath, like in a white or whatever. And then you have this very floral, very colorful top over that. Then you wear either the matching pant, or you have very loose fitting, kind of flowy pants, and usually shoes that are quite wide and have a wooden heel. You know the look that I'm going
like
for?
Like a wedge.
Right.
Like, you know, like a thick
gungalela. Exactly. So I'm describing this, but I don't know anything about women's fashion, so I may get the names wrong. And then the hairstyle is very important. It must come from one side and like have some kind of dramatic, like a waterfall, right?
Yes, 100%. And like blonde streaks, if you can. If you can just do like the blonde streaks on the one side, then you have clocked the Karen look, please. Perfect. And then there's those little black sunglasses. If you really want to take it to another level, you have the little black sunglasses where they'll definitely take you. So it's like as you walk in, that heel is just squishing.
And by the way, I've seen equal numbers of black and white women who fit this description. Huh?
100%.
Absolutely. 100%. It's a psychographic kind. It's not a demographic, but it's a psychographic. And these women are not to be messed with. They take shopping very seriously.
And they get shit done. Like, I can't be mad. I can't be mad at them. Like, after what I experienced, I'm like, hey, man, maybe this is a persona I need to take on from time to time. Right. I mean, if you are truly a Karen in your heart, then, you know, you're living like a different life, because sometimes they just use it inappropriately.
Yes.
You know, most times it's just used in the wrong context and they're just fucking around. But if you want to get shit done, honestly, just speak up and just like raise your voice a little, scare them a little bit. Mm. And then just say, let me speak to your manager.
Well, all you need to do is make it clear to them that you are not the kind of person who's just going to go away quietly. That's really all.
Yes.
So they must know, this woman, we've got to sort her out because she's going to be noisy and loud and she's not going to leave until we fix this.
100%. No, they put me in a little room. They gave me like a little room. They're like, okay, you can sit here
until
we solve your thing. Because I'm like, I'm not leaving. I'm literally not leaving this bank until this is sorted. And I tested them on that thing, and I really didn't leave. Mm. And Bob became my uncle because I got sorted. So all you need to do is just fight a little bit, and you'll be sorted. Otherwise, I had to wait till Thursday. Like, are they high? Who has that time to wait till Thursday? Nah.
No, for sure. So Sanella says, that ATM thing happened to me last year. I told them that I'm not leaving the bank. They must get me on the phone with someone who can get my money into my account. They can go home and leave me in there. Yeah, you got to make it clear that you're not going to leave, that you are going to sort this out, whether it costs you all your day and all of your night. So there's an interesting story. Apparently, someone left a tip of 20,000 rand for a waiter at a bar in Cape Town. Look at this. Here is the Milk Restaurant and Champagne Bar. It's in somewhere in Khayelitsha in Cape Town. And apparently, the bill came to 216,287.50 rand. And the service charge on that's 20,000 rand. How's that? That's quite a big bill.
This is so common. It's a big bill, but Garrett, this happens all the time. And to be honest, 216,000 is not a lot contextually.
Are you
these
kidding?
These people can drink. Dude, these people can drink, bruh. You know what? We need to go to Konka. Let's go to Konka. Konka is an establishment in Soweto. Yeah. I've never been there, but I've heard a lot of stories. Dude, the pulls go up to like 800,000, 600,000, like on average. Huh. On average, people have money out there. We are the ones that just don't, or we're just using our money differently, because they are okay to spend this kind of money on pure alcohol.
I'm going to look at this bill with you quickly. Let's go through this. So there's tonic water, appetizer, sunrise cocktail, still water. Then there's a Remy Martin, okay, which only one for 1,500. Then some Hennessy, four of those at 20 grand each. Then some food. There's some lamb chops, some wings and chips, ribs and chips. More Hennessy, Verve Clicquot, four of those bottles. 25 Hennessys. I think that's obviously the shots, I think. Then we've got Mum.
It's the S, yeah.
Yeah. We got Mum, then we've got Moët, we've got Dom Pérignon, we've got Ace, that's the Ace of Spades. And then we have some Hubblies, some Hookers, and then a couple of Red Bulls. So the most expensive single item on here is probably, it's the Dom Pérignon, 10 of those.
The Dom Pérignon, 10 of them for 60 grand.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's delicious, it tastes great, but I mean, not 10. But also the bigger thing here, Gareth, is that these people are generally not buying this alcohol for themselves and their peers at their little table. They are, you know, inviting randoms to come and drink with them. Mm. If there's a table next to them that's full of like good-looking girls, then they'll be like, hey, good-looking girls, come and join us. That's automatically another six people that they are ultimately feeding. And then. And in some cases, like in this particular case, I know apparently the guy that was there who did all this buying bought a bottle of Hennessy for every single table in the club.
Wow.
He was just like, I'm such a big baller. You get a Hennessy. Everybody gets a Hennessy. Which is like, cool, thanks.
I'm hanging out in the wrong places because I have to pay for my drinks, which is very sad. But then also, I'm not a girl.
Me too. You know,
if you're you could go there and you could say, oh, hi, how are you? And they'll say, oh, Lebang, I'll give you a bottle of this and a bottle of that. And you wouldn't have to pay for anything. So, yes, I'm keen. Let's go to Gonka. I'm very keen to do that. That'll be fun.
Let's go to Gonka. Cool. Social experiment. Let's go to Gonka and let's just like see the vibes and like, you know, just like, and then we'll give the listeners feedback about our experience. Chances are I can get extremely wasted without spending a cent. Chances are
you'd have to pay
for everything, but you'd be the token white guy.
Ah.
And also you're famous. So maybe you wouldn't have to pay for anything. Let's see. Social experiment.
So what's interesting about this is, you know, we always talk about, oh, the townships, people there are so poor and life is so horrible and you've got their sewage going down their street and you hear all of that, the dusty streets of the townships, all that stuff, which is all true, obviously. But look at how interesting this little microcosm is. Look at how amazing the stuff is that happens in a place in Khayelitsha, which I don't think South Africans who don't live there would even know about. People dropping like 200,000 rand on one night's drinking. It's amazing. I mean, that's really absolutely amazing. So, and I love it because for all those people who are complaining here, like lovely Lady Lee says, that's stolen money. Well, you don't know that. I smell a bit of money laundering, says Bongi. Moonchild says, I'm finished. It must have been a government minister. But here's the thing, guys. Like, I want to make you feel good about this because if someone is spending that money, I got great news. They're putting it straight back into the economy. That's good. This conspicuous consumerism is very good for South Africa. These people may have got this money from ill-gotten gains. Who knows? Maybe they just run really successful businesses. You don't know that for a fact, so you can't say you know it's stolen. But if it was, let's say it is like government tenders and that kind of thing, then aren't you pleased that they're putting it straight back into the economy? Because if they were putting it into a Swiss bank account, trust me, you'd be a lot more pissed off, right?
We'd be pissed off regardless of what they do. Either way, we'd be pissed off because it's like, oh, no, you're drinking the money. Oh, that's so much money to be drinking. You could build a house with that money. Or I can do whatever I want with my money.
Right.
As an option.
I don't like anyone telling anyone else what to do with their money. And it's a very, it's a South African thing, but it's also a global thing. It's like people see rich people, or not necessarily rich people, but people who pretend to be rich, and they see them spending and they're like, oh, that's terrible. But it isn't really. It's actually cool because they're putting their money straight back into the economy, which is good for all of us. And it's their money. It's in their account. It's on their credit card. They can do, as Lebang says, whatever they want. It's not your money. So stop worrying about other people's money. And then one last thing. Someone sent me this on email yesterday. I just thought it was really interesting. So this is some post on Twitter. Dr. Dame Katie Denise, hashtag trans animals. There's an actual person on Twitter who says, not only was Eurita dumped at the altar, spelled incorrectly, when her transphobic husband-to-be discovered she had a sheenus, she returned home to find all her chairs had been removed. My heart breaks for this beautiful woman. Chairs for trans, chair poverty, trans women or women, LGBTQ. Now, there's a lot going on here, all right? So let's just try and unpack this because this is a lot to deal with.
This is loaded.
All right, so let's start with this person called Eurita. You can see a picture of her if you're watching on YouTube. It's definitely a very butch man with a wig on and a wedding dress, okay? Apparently, this person was going to marry someone who the person who wrote this tweet says is transphobic. But can you really be called transphobic if you were going to marry this person? Anyway.
Well, if you left them at the altar, you ultimately become transphobic because you left them hanging.
Imagine if every straight marriage that didn't go right was all about how they're straight phobic. Mm. You know, that doesn't make any sense. Imagine if every guy or girl who was jilted at the altar started complaining on Twitter about, I think it's because you're straight phobic. It's stupid and doesn't make any sense at all. But anyway, I like this word, a sheeness. So apparently this person, Urita, has a sheeness, which I assume is a penis on a trans...
A twin plug?
On a trans woman. So I don't even know how that works. I'm not really that interested.
Yeah.
I could care less. I really don't think this is that important. But here's the worst part of the whole tweet. She returned home to find all her chairs had been removed. All her chairs had been removed.
That is the most interesting part, actually.
Right. So Urita,
because where are the chairs?
Urita and her sheeness and being jilted at the altar, all that stuff's great, but all her chairs had been removed. I mean, you know, that talk about spiteful. You know, you leave Urita at the altar. You're a transphobe who doesn't like her sheeness. And now you take her chairs? I mean, really?
Not the chairs, buddy. Not the chairs. I mean, everything else can be managed.
Sure.
Leave me at the altar, sure. You know? Do say what you like about who I am, but not my chairs, buddy.
I love these hashtags, chairs for trans, chair poverty, and trans women are women. This is very important stuff, you know. This is why I think that, you know, we don't know what suffering really is. We don't know here in South Africa, we think we have it hard. But this poor person, this Urita, no chairs, a sheeness,
no chairs,
being left at the altar. But mostly
no
chairs.
No person to go home with.
Mostly no chairs. I think it's a very sad story, and I thought we would draw attention to it this morning, because God knows if we don't, it can only get worse, you know. And we know that this is the kind of violence, in inverted commas, that, you know, someone like Urita is exposed to every day by her chairs being taken away.
No one deserves this.
Oh, it's
no
horrible.
No one deserves this, Gareth. Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
I know.
Please, can you just... all of us, hashtag prayers for Urita.
No,
please, it's so important.
Chairs for Urita. Chairs for
Urita. Change your profile pictures. Everybody, yes. Do something. Make a trend.
I think
is important.
If everyone can donate one chair to Urita, I mean, she'll have so many,
please.
She'll never run out again. And then, you know, that'll also prove that you're not transphobic. So I think everybody, please get on that bandwagon ASAP. It's very important that we do this. What?
In fact, let's start a GoFundMe.
Oh God! I mean, how's that?
Who gave everybody the internet? There needs to be like a filter for who can use the internet.
Yeah.
We can't all use it because we don't know how to use it. We're using it wrong. Mm-hmm. I promise you, we're using it wrong.
So I'm sure that lots of people who have real problems in their lives and are trying to figure out how to feed their children or how to get to work this morning, or whether or not they're going to be able to make it back home tonight. I'm sure that they feel embarrassed to admit their problems around someone like Urita, who has real problems. Anyway, so there we go. You know, you've got to pay attention to these things, everybody. And I will keep doing my part in making sure that we talk about this stuff, because it's very, very important.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, sister. All right. You've got to do that. You've got to click your fingers after that.
Spread fingers.
There we go. That's how you know. That's how you know someone's completely woke. All right. It is time for us to talk about something that is important. And we were making fun of this stupid and ridiculous story just a second ago. But we live in a country where we have major, major problems. The costly impact of gender-based violence. And we can only do ourselves and the victims of this an enormous favor by trying to research the reasons, trying to research the circumstances, trying to understand how so many of these women find themselves in a position and in a family or in a relationship or in a neighborhood where this kind of thing seems to be absolutely endemic. We're going to speak to Professor Corné Davis, who's an associate professor at the University of Johannesburg, also a lecturer in the Department of Strategic Communication. Now, her focus is gender-based violence, communication, and multidisciplinary collaboration aimed at social intervention strategies. She's currently busy with research aimed at the development of programs to help community action networks that can enable people to address GBV and find actual practical solutions. And The report that has been issued is called Shared Value Africa, and that, along with the University of Johannesburg, has embarked on a research project in collaboration with a Swedish university and supported by KPMG. The research was led by Prof. Cornelia Davis, who we'll meet in a moment, in collaboration with the Swedish partners. And globally, we're talking about gender and gender inequality in the workplace, and we've got to look at what's happened since COVID-19. Now, more than ever, companies need a comprehensive plan to support and advance women in business, the focus on accountability and results. Now, you may have opinions on all of that, but let me welcome Professor Cornelia Davis to the show so we can talk about this. Hi, Prof. How are you?
I'm great. And you?
Good. Hi, very Prof. Good. And nice to have you on the show. Lebang and I are excited to talk to you. There's a lot that we've got to cover here. So let's just talk about the research here. You guys are focused on two focus areas. The first one is the human capital and healthcare costs of GBV, and then the awareness, knowledge, and opinions about the prevalence of GBV and its prevention in South Africa. So let's talk about those two things.
Okay, the research started off, it was conceptualized by myself, University of Johannesburg Strategic Communication, and Tiki Barnard, Shared Value Africa. We teamed up. I found Tiki on a web page. I saw a project that she did. I saw, well, somebody's excited about addressing gender-based violence. So we started talking and we conceptualized this research. You know, previously in South Africa, the last report was published in 2014, which was KPMG report called Too Costly to Ignore.
Right.
But since then, there had been no other research done. So we realized we've got a problem insofar as there are increasing calls on the private sector to participate in addressing gender-based violence, but yet nowhere globally or locally have they been engaged with and asked about their perceptions of their role to address gender-based violence. So we engaged with 73 leaders and CEOs of leading companies in South Africa. And then we put together a survey instrument for employees in South Africa to see, but what do they feel should be done? What kind of support is needed? What do they think drive gender-based violence? Why is it so prevalent in South Africa? What should we be doing about it? And what do employers expect from their employers? And so that was the second stream. And then we partnered with international global health economist expert, Professor Kustof Dalal. He has done research in 52 countries. He's known for his cost estimation. So he did secondary data analysis to just get an idea, what is it costing South Africa at the moment? And that was just preliminary. We continued the research. We traveled South Africa. We went to Cape Town, East London, KwaZulu-Natal, and Bloemfontein. We engaged with stakeholders to get a more accurate estimation of the kind of experiences of victims and service providers and people dealing with gender-based violence. So, yes, we're aiming to make the study more comprehensive, of course, but this is more or less how it happened.
So just to be clear, this is particularly aimed at discovering what we can do about this in the private sector, what sort of effects it's having in the private sector. Is that correct?
Correct, because, previously this has been approached as a health public health issue, a government issue,
right,
a public health issue, NGO issue, but it's never been approached from a business perspective. Okay, where is it getting positioned? Because if you look at business literature, corporate social responsibility, governance, investment, HR, the ESG criteria,
all the stuff that has nothing to do with profit.
All the stuff that's got nothing, nowhere is gender-based violence being placed and said, okay, it fits within a governance, or it should be occupational health and safety, or it should be HR. Well, it should be, well, it's not being positioned there in any business literature. And I'm saying this from an academic's perspective. You know, we publish and we do research. And if you want to publish your work, you need to get into mainstream social science journals. And they have not been publishing the topic of gender-based violence at all. So the only place where I published before was African Safety Promotion, for example. So we needed to bring it into a perspective where it becomes a topic for business, which was why we did this study and why it's so important. It was to raise awareness amongst leaders and CEOs, that your perpetrators and victims are very much in the office as well. They are not only some out rural community in a poverty-stricken places where gender-based violence happens everywhere. So, I am a survivor myself, which is why I've become an activist.
All right, so Prof, what is the nature of the problem in the office? Because is it worse than you expected? What kind of research do we have on where this stuff occurs, how it occurs, and why in particular we need to be paying attention to the private sector? Because a lot of people who are cynical would say, oh, well, I think that this is probably only a way for people to try and siphon funds out of private enterprises who aren't responsible for this as an institution or as institutions, but now suddenly have the responsibility of being like a foster parent to people who have, I don't know, all kinds of things that now become the HR department's issue, whether it's gender-based violence, whether it's looking after the children, whether it's supporting in, you know, health, whether it's supporting in meal provision, all of that stuff. And all of this is being put at the door of private enterprise. Private enterprise aren't exactly, as far as I can tell, going around telling people commit gender-based violence. They're certainly not the ones who are in society trying their best to make sure that gender-based violence remains a thing. Are these lines very blurred, or is it just me? I mean, government, you know, families, the breakdown of the family, the role of men in society, the role of private enterprises and public enterprises and all of this, it can become a bit mixed up. You heard in my intro, I said, you know, gender inequality comes into this. But the moment you start bringing in political issues like gender inequality, is it still about GBV?
Absolutely, Gareth. You see, there's a different perspective now. We are looking at the whole person perspective, because as I heard in one of the other talks when I was at the JSE last week, we're saying that when you come to work as a person. A person who's experiencing things in your personal life, you're bringing that same person to work. You're not a different person there. And if you're looking at the statistics of South Africa, most people have experienced some kind of gender-based violence in their lifetime. At some stage, there were studies done that ranged up to 77% of women, for example, in Gauteng and Limpopo. So the numbers vary, and the statistics can be argued, because we've got such a low reporting rate and a low conviction rate. But the bottom line is that gender-based violence is something that is so prevalent that it definitely affects the productivity of employees in the private sector as well. So it has got an impact on business. It's a matter of well-being now. It's not a matter of saying, oh, now the private sector's got to take on another burden and there's another expectation of them. That's not the point at all. The understanding has to be that what affects your productivity and what affects the well-being of our society is everybody's business. And it's now at the point where we say, it's not just a private sector issue now. It's everybody's issue. It is government, okay, it is NGO, it is private sector, but we need to collaborate and we need to get a holistic picture and understand these are the consequences. Just to add to that, look, for example, at South Africa. Where are we at the World Happiness Index? Number 101. Look at the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. What is the mental state of our society? Surely that is something for us all to pay attention to. Surely well-being of our society should somehow be prioritized above all, you know?
Yeah.
Gareth, can I just chime in there? Sorry, Prof, like, I just envision, like, as a woman going into the workplace and you are working in corporate and you've just been, you know, physically, emotionally, whateverly abused by your partner. How are you supposed to have the chias to just stand up in the morning, go to work, put on a smile, and then just continue on with your day? And then also have to deal with your male counterparts in the office who maybe look down on you, who maybe don't view you as an equal. There are so many things. And I think this is what Prof, most of the research is speaking to, is that this does have an effect in the workplace. It has a major effect in the workplace, because I'm not going to come to work and perform in the same way. If anything, I'm lucky to even make it to work. So it's not the full responsibility of the private sector, but they should at least do something and collaborate with the public sector, government. It's everybody's problem, basically, is what we're saying. And I completely agree with the Prof on this one. And also with you, Gareth, it's not just the private sector now having to suddenly care for everybody. But dude, I'm your employee. I'm clearly suffering at home, and that same suffering, I'm going to unfortunately bring it into the workplace. Do you want me to be productive? Then you will do something about this. Help me to help you, basically, is how I see it.
Prof?
Absolutely. Let me tell you what came out very strongly from the employee survey, the answers that came out of there. There's a very strong request almost for education. You know, although people are very aware of gender-based violence, there is such a range of different kinds of gender-based violence and a lack of understanding about how did we come about it. For example, I'll share my story with you. I grew up in a household where my father was a patriarch and a narcissist because he was the only son. He had four sisters. They thought he could do no wrong. And he was brought up to believe that he had to be served, obeyed, and treated like a superhuman. And the consequences was that it was a verbally, emotionally, psychologically, and physically abusive childhood because of a society that creates this idea, this notion of superiority. And nobody ever said, but what you're doing is wrong. The way you treat your wife and children are wrong. So the society that all contributed to creating this perception of superiority. And these are the kind of things that we need to speak to and question and say, okay, but this is not the way things should be, so that we can teach about different gender roles, about different, break down those stereotypes. So the workplace is an ideal environment to provide information, for example. So you can have information. These are the different kinds of gender-based violence that is happening in South Africa. This is the prevalence of it. This is the consequences for victims. This is the impact on children who have been exposed to verbal, emotional, psychological, or financial abuse in their homes. These are the consequences. So that we can get together and say, okay.
But again, Prof.
Let's look at... What is happening?
Again, I don't see the immediate causal link between... I know that there's a responsibility on all of us to carry society on our shoulders. Everyone has that responsibility. I get that. But I don't see why private enterprise in particular has to shoulder this burden. I don't see how private enterprise has any role to play here other than to give people employment and for people then to figure out from there on what they want to do. And I don't understand how, for example, a large financial institution has to be the daddy, has to be the paymaster, has to be the social worker, and has to be the person's life management coach. In a world where they actually are trying to make money and run a business, and none of those things are important to the running of a business, even though we live in a society where all of these things are happening, we're well aware of it. We know what a problem gender-based violence is. We know how much better we would function as a society if we didn't have this stuff. But I don't see how you create the link between the things that are going on and the responsibility of businesses, other than that it looks to me like a lot of people see business and they go, ooh, there's some money. Let's get our hands on that by forcing them to do this ESG stuff.
No, Gareth, it's not that simple. Why
not?
It's not that simple in approach.
Explain.
Because it does affect business. People's productivity is impacted severely because of gender-based violence.
Have you measured
so
that?
People,
have we got a number that can give us an idea of how much it affects?
Yes. We looked at, if you look at our report, the secondary analysis done by Prof. Dalal looked at the cost to South African economy at this stage, roughly estimated at 36 billion rand, a loss in productivity. So it definitely does impact on our economy and on the productivity of business. Most people absent from work are not physically ill. Look at the South African Depression and Anxiety Group statistics. So it definitely has an influence on how people perform at work. How the profit of the companies are affected is definitely influenced by gender-based violence. And it's because it's stigmatized and silenced. People just don't talk about it. So you get both perpetrators and victims in the workplace. It's across all sectors. In every private sector organizations, you will find both victims and perpetrators. And if we want to address this as a society, then we need to at least provide information. No, you don't have to appoint a social worker, and you don't have to incur all sorts of expenses to address gender-based violence.
But the idea is raise awareness. But Prof, I'm afraid these companies do have to. They are forced as a kind of a prerequisite in order to do business in this country. You are forced to have to do things like you discovered in your questionnaire. We have to talk to the LGBTQIAPK community. These are all political motivations for what is essentially not business's business, if you don't mind my saying. I mean, nobody in South Africa, and this is the problem, anywhere in the world, I know this is happening in America, and I know it's happening in Europe too, but when we make a gray area out of things like gender inequality or, you know, education on different kinds of sexuality, and we combine that in a category with something hugely serious like gender-based violence, it has the effect of diminishing the importance of the gender-based violence and making greater these political concerns, which may not be related at all.
I know these things do overlap. Gender identity has become a top global sustainability priority, as you know. We refer to it as social inclusion, because that's another problem that is linked to gender-based violence as well, because of homophobia. So there's violence committed against other gendered people, and there's, to a large extent, still exclusion, which is an issue we have to deal with. But gender-based violence in itself, although coupled with other issues, is the major issue we need to focus on because of the damage it is causing our economy and because of the impact it has on the lives of people in every sector of society. So it is not just an add-on. Look at, for example, in Canada, gender-based violence intervention and prevention has become written into the Occupational Health and Safety Act. That is ideally where a person, you know, where a country wants to be.
Again,
so that
then
addressing it.
It's not,
you know,
giving these companies any option. So they can do, as a matter of course, for care for their employees, they could spend fortunes on this, but it would be by choice. Instead, we're trying to legislate this stuff, and a lot of it has political overtones. For example, ESG, there's this huge part of this which has to do with environmental and global warming concerns, which are not related to the subject at hand. Yet they're all thrown into the bucket because they're politically useful to the people who are pushing this stuff. What it does is it makes gender-based violence a back burner issue where it should be the front and center issue for all of us. And we suddenly find ourselves talking about everything, including global warming, including transgender rights, including all kinds of other left-wing political imperatives, and nothing to do with gender-based violence at the end, because it's all, you know, it's useful to then use the suffering of the gender-based violence crew in order to push your other political imperatives. You understand? I mean, it looks to me very suspicious.
I hear where you're coming from, Gareth, because it's a complex scenario. We are dealing with all kinds of problems, as you know, globally. We've got social problems, and we've got political problems, and we've got environmental problems. It's never a simple scenario. But globally, if you look at gender-based violence, it's been estimated at costing the global economy $1.5 trillion. And it's also been linked to the issue of gender inequality, because you will find in gender-based violence studies that most women who remain in abusive relationships cannot afford financially to leave, because there has been unequal opportunity and the escalations of women's career paths have not accelerated enough. Women are still not in the leadership positions and afforded the same opportunities as men. That's why you have the issue of inequality still on the agenda. It's just a fact. We need to promote the equality of women so that they can achieve independence and leave abusive relationships, which is a major concern at the moment.
But then you're admitting that that is a political concern, which you are then strong-arming companies to have to do. They don't have an option. They have to conform to your political imperatives. That's what you're saying.
But remember, this has been a global issue since 1979, when you had the conventions for the elimination of all violence against women and girls. Then you had the Beijing Convention that aimed to get achieve gender equality. Then you had the Istanbul Convention. To date, you've got about five countries out there who isn't even close to achieving gender equality. This has just never been driven globally, locally. It's just never been prioritized enough. We are not there yet.
When people hear these things all used in the same, you know, to push an agenda, they tend to think, oh, okay, this isn't about gender-based violence at all. And that's the problem I have with this, is because we know, I don't think there's anyone in South Africa who denies that gender-based violence is one of our major, major social issues, probably our biggest one, that and fatherlessness. And yet, when it's thrown into a box of all of these other left-wing imperatives, it just sounds to me like, you know, okay, so we've, in other words, because we can't impose a political agenda on people, and because we can't impose an economic agenda on people, we'll just force the companies to have to comply with legislation and with rules that have nothing to do with their business and have everything to do with what academics and left-wing institutions want to do. You see what I mean?
No, Gareth, it's got everything to do with business. If you look at the Global Gender Gap report, right? The last report showed that the global economy could improve by $12 trillion if gender equality was achieved.
Well,
it is always about the benefit of society at large and about the benefits of getting equality. So it's not just political. It is economic and it is social. It's all of those. It's never going to be a simple issue. It's a complex issue.
Are there countries where they have implemented all of this and they have seen positive results, where we can measure them?
There have been some. If you look at the top-ranked happiness countries in the world, coincidentally, those are the ones who have achieved the highest levels of gender equality and the lower levels of gender-based violence overall. So you can look up on those countries who are at the top of the World Happiness Index. And you can see that there have been some progress made, but we're far from there. We're at number 101 on the happiness index. We still have major issues to deal with.
So what should companies do and what should they know, Prof? What should companies be implementing either on their own or if they're forced at gunpoint by the government to do it? What should we be doing to make lives for these women who are victims of gender-based violence, to make their lives less awful and to make their opportunities that much greater? How can we help?
I think the most important thing, and it's a simple start, is just a sensitivity and an acknowledgement that in South Africa, our statistics are 5 times higher than the global average. Raise awareness. Say, you don't have to address anything directly as a start. You can say, these are the facts. Provide the information to employees. Support organizations who support victims, such as Tears Foundation, for example, or many of the others. We've got Power, we've got several organizations, Teddy Bear Clinic. Mm-hmm. There are so many NGOs who do provide information. If companies don't want to do it themselves, just refer. Say, these are the statistics for South Africa, which is readily be available. It's accessible. It can be just put on your webpage and say, this is South Africa, this is the prevalence. If you are in a situation, these are contact numbers, these are support systems in place. Just raise awareness as a start and then make it a safe environment so that people who do experience it feel that they can have somewhere to go without being so stigmatized that nobody can talk about it. Let's just open the conversation so that it's more freely addressed, you know, because this is uncomfortable to say, and it's always when we talk with gender-based violence activists, but there are perpetrators who require support as well. Because people aren't born perpetrators. They socialize into becoming perpetrators through various circumstances. But we can't just focus on victims. We also need to provide information to perpetrators. So we need to say, this is acceptable behavior. This is unacceptable behavior. Yeah. Should you find yourself experiencing these kinds of aggressiveness or aggression or violent aspect, this is supposed to be where you can go, what you can do. It's so layered. We need to start healing from somewhere. And whatever we do, whatever awareness we raise, whatever collaboration we can achieve is something. Even if companies say, no, we don't want, we've got enough expenditure, but just give information. Just start somewhere that we as a society can just see some kind of relief, some kind of recovery. So, because if we don't, it just repeats itself.
How do you feel about the politicians who give this lip service the whole time? You know, we have our 16 days of activism, and Lebang and I have talked about this on the show a million times. And every year in December, they put on a big show, and you have the president talk, and everybody pretends that they care, and nothing improves, nothing changes. There's plenty of awareness, which, to your point, it seems that politicians can't wait to talk about this because it makes them look like they care. But they aren't actually doing anything, are they?
That's always been a great challenge. And you know, Gareth, why? Where is the money behind it? You cannot build solutions. You cannot have safe houses accessible and available. You cannot run, you cannot set up anything with insufficient funding. So That is the problem, that there's too much talk and not enough funds available to address this.
And do activists then see the private sector as a source for those funds? Because this is what I was getting at earlier. If that's the case, then this does look a little bit, like a hustle, like a shakedown. And if that's the case, then obviously, you know, these companies are going to be loath to do more than they absolutely have to. We have so many charities in this country, and you've brought up a couple of them, and they all do amazing work. We have an absolute excess because we have such need in South Africa. But we do have funding issues, and there are so many independent charities. There are church organizations. There are shelters that are being run in communities by people who don't have a lot of money, and they're doing a wonderful job to help the women in those communities. But the private sector is playing its part, and I just feel like, you know, it's easy to target them because we see a pot of money and we say, oh, well, we want them to appropriate that money for X, Y, and Z. And then we know if the government appropriates that money, it's just going to be spent on things that have nothing to do with sorting out gender-based violence.
Now, money is unfortunately a problem, because if you think about it, Gareth, if a woman is in an abusive relationship, where does she go?
Right.
Where's the place of safety? So besides saying who's funding it, government should be funding it, the bottom line is there are no places of, or not insufficient places of safety to go, wherever you are. For example, if you look at the north, the northern suburbs, where do women go? There is just nowhere to go. If you're going to go to the police, you're going to go back home to the perpetrator. Where are your children going to go to school? Where are the support systems? So I'm not saying, just plonk another responsibility on the private sector to donate more billions. It's a societal problem. And together, somehow, we need to come up with a system where there are places of safety to go and where there are facilities for perpetrators to become rehabilitated, to change behavior. So somehow we've got to find solutions together. It cannot come from one source, but if we don't put things in place together, how are we going to solve this problem? How are we going to reduce gender-based violence in South Africa? You know, we're the red country. We're the red highlighted country.
Sure. It's embarrassing. Lebang, you've obviously got some. I've kind of dominated the last little bit. I'm sorry, I've taken up a lot of your time. What do you want to ask the prof?
So the thing that stood out for me, prof, in getting through the report was really just how little I know about GBV. When I think about GBV, the PR of it is just a man and a woman in a relationship, and then a woman getting abused. But there's other forms of abuse that are so rife, and I think they could be maybe a little bit more dangerous than the physical abuse. Because with the physical abuse, you can see it. And then obviously when you see it, you're like, oh my word. But I think the education of what GBV actually is. So for example, the economic abuse, and this is where the workplace comes in. And this is why it ties into ultimately everything that happens. That really stood out to me. And I realized maybe we don't know enough about what GBV truly is at its source. So what would you say are the key findings from this report that we can take away right now very quickly? Listening to you, and we can actually say, okay, cool, this does make sense. This is what you guys found from the report, and this is what you're ultimately saying the private sector can actually do without feeling all that pressure that Gareth spoke about earlier to change the lives of these women.
Correct. For example, for our UJ students, we put together a brochure identifying exactly what different kinds of gender-based violence students are exposed to, what makes them more vulnerable, what aspects to look out for, what to consider if they find themselves in situations. So we focused on students' issues, and we compiled the brochure for students. What makes it difficult for organizations to put an online brochure available to staff, discussing, showing different kinds, defining it's available. There are many support services. Shared Value Africa Initiative, who partnered with us on this research, there's information, they're on the process of developing a toolkit. There's easily accessible information. So even if we can just start with information, because the employee survey indicated they're asking for this education that you're talking about. They're asking to understand, okay, what constitutes gender-based violence? What is the scope of it? How do I recognize it? How do I measure its impact on me? How do I self-assess? Just provide information as a start. That's not costly. That's not demanding millions or making.
There's information. Stuff we can insist on as a society, and there's stuff we should insist on. We should insist that perpetrators get locked up in jail, that they get convicted by a justice system that works for women. Yeah. We can insist that police stations treat women with respect when they come in after a gender-based violence case. These are things we should be asking of institutions we already have. And that it takes it a step beyond information. We should find out what it is that makes men in this country so violent and so aggressive and so hurtful and so abusive. We've got to find out those things. And I suppose we've also got to decide who's going to jail, because someone has to be locked up if they behave like this. These people need to be punished for their actions against these women. And that, I think, is something we need to take a lot more seriously, because it's fine for us to talk about it. And I'm also, I mean, I know, Prof, you work on this day and night, and you know, bless you for it, because if it wasn't for you bringing people's attention to this, it would just disappear onto a back page of a newspaper, and it would become less and less an important issue, except to the people who are actually going through it. But I'm tired of hearing politicians, even business people who pay lip service to this. And I'm sure women are even more sick of it, which is why so few of them are even moved by things like 16 days. Let's lock people up. Let's put them in jail.
But look what happened. But look what happened. I was on carte blanche with the Jaco Swart case.
Yes.
Where it went viral, how violently, and he got a suspended sentence and a minuscule fine.
Unacceptable.
This is the justice system. This is the system is failing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally unacceptable. So we've got systemic problems. We have got insufficient police officers. We've got insufficient social workers. We don't have places of safety. Our court system is questionable. So we've got systemic failures that all need to be corrected.
Prof?
Just lastly, I remember interviewing a couple of women who are actually also working in GBV organizations. And the sad reality of when women experience any form of abuse, they go to the police station to try and open a case, report their partner or their perpetrator, whatever. The first thing that they're told at the police station is, go home and fix things. These things happen. Unreal. You're not the only one. They do not care. They don't even give you time of day and even want to hear your story. So systematically, we are very, very screwed. And really, the purpose of this conversation is, what can we do about it? Because we can't keep just sitting and talking. It's really that deeply rooted in problems in South Africa, globally even.
Absolutely. And I think what we can all start in saying, but let's see what I can do. What can I do? Can I retweet something? Can I post something? Am I an influencer? Can I say something? Everybody can do something. The point is, because it's stigmatized and silenced because of it, that people are, it took me 10 months to get that survey completed, because people just don't want to deal. It's an uncomfortable topic. So everybody ducks and dives. Nobody really wants to talk about it. They don't really want to retweet it. They don't really want an opinion, because it's so sensitive. But let's get it out there and desensitize it so that we can do something and everybody can play a role. I'm an activist because I'm an academic and I have various platforms to address people, and that's my role. But everybody can play a role. You know, we can all say, you know, what I'm seeing here is unacceptable, and I'm going to say something. I'm just going to say this is unacceptable. How difficult is that? What does it cost to say what I'm seeing is unacceptable?
And more men can be saying that too, I think.
Absolutely.
Prof, listen, this is only we've scratched the surface. I'm sure that we would love to have you back at some point if you're willing to come back and talk some more about this.
Absolutely. I'd like to see how can we do this together. We can only do it together. Let's all take our responsibility. You use whatever you got to fight this. Everybody's got something. Let's all just give our something.
Let's consider this a start. Thank you for sharing some of those key findings from the research with us. And we will obviously be talking to you at some point in the future, because I really do think we've got lots to unpack still. And congratulations on getting that report published, and congratulations on making it something that I think we need to pay attention to. We're going to press people's nose to this if we have to. And hopefully we can start making some really serious gains that will result in proper, you know, lives improved at the end of this.
We are determined. We are going to be successful.
Good.
We are determined. Good. We will change South Africa together. thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Prof. What a pleasure to have you on. Professor Cornet Davis, who's at the University of Johannesburg, and a fiery and fantastic conversation this morning, Lebang. I think that's given us energy for the rest of the day. Let's get out there and make the world a little bit better in some small way, as the prof said. All right, everybody, have an excellent day. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers. Be good. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cliffcentral.com.